my name's Corey.
Hi, Corey.
I'm a real grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Alateen and Al-Anon, and I'm really happy to be here this weekend. The weather's gorgeous. The committee's been really good to me. I got to come out here and spend some time with my dad. It's been a good trip. So thank you to the committee. You've done an awesome job. It's a fabulous conference. I started in Alateen when I was 7. Both of my parents are alcoholics, although they've both been sober since I was 2. And I never really thought that alcoholism affected me very much because, you know, my parents were sober. I just thought, you know, they go to meetings. You know, they're out of the house a lot, whatever. My mom talks about these crazy 12 steps all the time. I don't know. She drags me to meetings with her sometimes. I have to sit in, like, a smoky Alano club and listen to old men bitch and smoke cigars. I don't know what this whole thing is about. But I didn't have a lot of friends when I was younger. And my dad was probably my closest friend and also probably my higher power at the time. And he said, well, there's an Al-Anon meeting I want to go to on Friday night, so you're going to the Alateen meeting. So I went. And, you know, I've tried to say a lot of times what made me stay in Alateen, and I'm not sure. I know that there were people there who were being really honest with each other and that I'd never seen that before. I know that, I'd never been a part of that. I always lied to everyone else and to myself. Maybe it was just because they were warm and welcoming, and I felt like I didn't fit in social situations. You know, I felt like I just didn't fit in with people. Maybe it was because they were just really warm and welcoming. Maybe it was because they colored. You know, I don't know. I really honestly to this day don't know what made me stay, but I did stay. Maybe it was because there was an hour a week where I got out of the house and I got away from everything that I knew, and I could be whoever I needed to be during that hour. And I spent a lot of time in my life being who I thought I needed to be for a social situation rather than who I was, and for that hour I could be whoever I needed to be. Whatever the reason was, when I left an Alateen meeting, I felt better than when I'd gotten there, period. And that was why I stayed, I think. And that kept me there for 5 years. And also the promise of AZAC. You can't go to AZAC until you're 12, and I really wanted to go. And I had all these dreams about going to AZAC. I really wanted to go to AZAC. And it lived up to all of my expectations and more. AZAC is a really incredible conference. Alateen conferences are a really incredible thing. They're a different genre from anything else I've ever seen. They're kind of their own monster. They're wonderful. And I got to AZAC at 12. I was a pretty miserable 12-year-old, I think, although I think most people are miserable at 12. I'm not sure. In retrospect, I think most people are miserable at 12. I don't think that was just me. But what I found at AZAC were people who were really working the steps and involved in service, and they had sponsors, and they were working the steps in writing, and they were doing all this stuff, and they were really happy. And that's when my story really starts. My story really starts when I found service, and I found the steps in writing, and I got myself a sponsor, and I started getting addicted to conferences, and traveling a lot. So I did a few years of that. I did a few years of, you know, I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And at that point, what really kept me coming around was no longer that got me out of the house or because my parents were alcoholics. It was because I needed the friendship. I needed that kind of fellowship. I needed to feel that love and that acceptance. I spent, you know, my whole life thinking that I wasn't good enough for whatever, you know. I just wasn't enough. I wasn't thin enough or pretty enough or perfect enough or smart enough or whatever. Anything you can put an enough at the end of, I wasn't, you know. I just wasn't. And I really thought that I wasn't lovable at all or that I wasn't worth other people's love. And so in Alateen, they just loved me. They didn't try to find out who I was. They saw my flaws, and they just loved me. Period. Across the board, loved me, and they hugged me. And I didn't have to try to be something for them. So I needed that really bad. So I stuck around, and I kept sticking around. And And I got a sponsor, and I started doing a bunch of service work and doing the steps in writing and hanging out at a lot of meetings and learning what Al-Anon worked and all of that stuff and met some really amazing friends. And then puberty kind of hit, which is a dangerous thing, really. It kills some people. Thankfully, I wasn't one of them. But it hit me really hard. And I went through a time period in my life where I did anything that would stop my feelings, change my feelings, numb me, take me out of reality. I was never a problem child. I was never a rebel. Like, I couldn't be a rebel. I was too much of a codependent. You know, I was too much of an Al-Anon. I was too much in control. I had to be in control. But I was into a lot of trouble emotionally and physically. I became sexually active at 15, which seems really young to me now. I developed a severe anorexia at a very young age, 12 through like 16 or something. And I got involved in drugs. And none of them because I wanted to rebel against my parents, you know, or against anything, society, I don't know. The anorexia was because I wanted to feel control over something and I wanted to be perfect somehow. And the drugs were because they numbed out my emotions and I didn't have to feel anything and they stopped the committee in my head for a little while. And the sex was because I didn't feel like I could be emotionally intimate with anyone. And it allowed me to be physically intimate on a level that, you know, I wasn't able to do emotionally. So I did all those things, and I got involved in a very codependent relationship with a practicing alcoholic who lived with me. And like I said, I was talking to my dad about this yesterday. I didn't think it was crazy at the time to live with someone that I was involved with at 15 and 16. You know, I didn't think that was weird. And now it seems like, you know, it was crazy. The person was using, and I was trying to get them sober, dragging them to AA meetings, and I was trying to do anything I could to get them sober. And I was really obsessed and really in a bad place. And it was at this time that Alateen took on a whole new meaning for me. I read somewhere that the definition of a codependent is someone who's addicted to alcoholics. And I said to myself, oh my God, that's me, you know? Like, I just take alcoholics. I have radar. You know, like, I will go through a room of people and pick out the child of an alcoholic and the alcoholic and the drug addict and the compulsive overeater, like, instantly I know them. You know, anyone who has any disease that I have, I can pick them out. Anyone who grew up in a family like mine, I can pick them out. I have radar. You know, I find them. I love them. I take them in. I try to fix them. I get obsessed with them. That's what I do. It's amazing. There's like no one in my life that I'm close to who's not really screwed up and, you know, who doesn't have one of those diseases in one way or another. I don't think it's because everyone has them. I think it's because I find them. And so that was me, you know. I was addicted to alcoholics. And so I started coming to Alateen because I realized that I was addicted to alcoholics. And I didn't want to be addicted to alcoholics anymore. But what was true was I really wanted to keep the alcoholics in my life. I just wanted to learn to pick the healthier alcoholics. I figured that in Alateen they'd teach me to pick the healthier alcoholics, which they have kind of, actually. I usually date the sober ones now. So I went through this really, this period of time where I don't know if I was any more unhappy than everybody else who's 14 and 15, I've come to realize that most people are just really unhappy at that time, kind of like 12. It's that whole puberty time. I think most people feel like they don't fit in and they're not comfortable, especially as children of alcoholics. But I didn't fit in with anybody. Nobody understood, you know, nobody understood that my head was trying to kill me and that I didn't know how to be a good person and I didn't know how to be a person. And so nobody understood that, and I didn't know how to talk about it to anybody because I was still so afraid that if I told somebody what was really going on in my head, or if I told somebody, like, this is what I think, you know, this is how I feel about the world around me, first of all, I was afraid that I would just fall apart, that all those pieces of me that I was just holding together, like, you know, with claws, they would just all fall on the floor, and I would have no way of putting them back together. But I was also afraid that people would not be able to love me at all, that even the people in Alateen who loved me unconditionally would not be able to love me if they knew what was really going on in my head. You know, because who could love me with the craziness that went on in the committee in my head? I didn't love me. I didn't know how anybody else could. And I had, God sends me things when I need them. In January of 99, I met a group of people called Coming To, who, it's a group of young recovering addicts who put their stories into a play and take it to high schools. And they asked me to be a part of their show as a child of an alcoholic. And so I got involved in their show, and I had to go to a lot more meetings, and a bunch of things happened to me in sort of like a 4 or 5 month period. I broke up with the person who I'd been with, who I was really in love with, but who was really bad for me. I stopped starving. I admitted that I had an addiction that I needed to deal with in a program other than Al-Anon. And I got sought help for that, and I came out as gay to my parents, and all of this within like 4 months, you know. And after that, I had this epiphany about fear, because you know what? Those were like the 4 scariest things in the universe to me. You know, I lost the person I thought I was supposed to love forever, my alcoholic, you know, the person I'd centered my whole universe around for 6 months, 8 months, was gone out of my life, and just everything happened. Everything was scary, and I realized something about fear was that I could walk through fear. You know, fear didn't scare me anymore. Sure, I was afraid of everything, but I was able to walk through that fear. I had walked through the 4 scariest things in my life in a period of 4 months, and I had lived through all of them. You know, I had joined a program that I swore I was never going to join because it was my parents, and I didn't want to be my parents. I love my parents, but I didn't want to be them, you know. I had given up the one addiction that I really loved, which was anorexia. I'd given up the one thing I had control over in my life and the one thing that I felt could make me perfect and make me lovable. I had given up the only thing I thought could ever make me lovable. I'd given up all my secrets all at once, and everything was okay. I mean, I was not okay. I was falling apart everywhere. But my world wasn't. My life wasn't. And it kind of hit me that I don't hold my world together. And which was, they've been telling me in Alateen for a number of years, but I didn't really believe them until then. You know, oh, I really don't hold my world together. Okay. And that became really clear to me. And what also became clear to me was that no matter how scary things are, with the help of a higher power, I can walk through them, and I will be okay on the other side eventually. Someday, I will be okay. And if it hadn't been for Alateen, I never would have made it through any of that. Alateen's gave me the courage to be somebody that I had to be or die. You know, I had to do all of those things with my life. I had to take care of me, or I would have died. And without the friends that I made in Alateen and the love that I found in Alateen, I wouldn't have done that. I'm not a very courageous person, but Alateens are courageous, and they give me courage. And what I get to do now is give other people courage when, you know, when they need it. That's kind of how it works. We're not all sick on the same days, you know, or not equally sick on the same days. So we get to offer each other a little bit of light. And that was pretty incredible that those people would give me that kind of love. And for the first time, it started to occur to me, a couple things started to occur to me. First, that the people in Alateen really did know all of the bad things about me. And they still loved me. They knew me, and they loved me. See, before I was thought that they just loved everybody, but it was that they knew Corey. They knew all of the bad things about Corey, and they loved me, period. They loved who I was. And I didn't understand that at all, you know. I really didn't understand that. But they kept telling me that if I could find a higher power who loved me, that I would learn to love myself, because I don't know as well as God does, you know? I don't know what God knows. So if God can love me, I must love myself, because I'm not God, you know? Like, God's smarter than me. If God does it, why can't I, you know? And it made sense to me, like, oh, well, God loves me. Why can't I love me, you know? And if I was lovable to, I found a higher power, really, through a lot of third step work. I found a higher power who I trusted and who had all of the characteristics that I wanted, who was, you know, loving and forgiving and all that stuff. My sponsor made me write down a list of what the perfect higher power would be. And then she said, that's your higher power. That's God now. And this perfect being loved me for me, knew everything and loved me for me. And if my God could do that and Alatine could do that, then I knew that I could figure out how to do that. And it's taken a lot of work. And there are still days when I don't really love myself. But the second thing that I learned was that Alatine is not about a place for me to go for an hour. And it's not about me being addicted to alcoholics. And it's not even about the fellowship that I find here that I need. Alatine is about me being one sick, messed up little kid. And I'm a sick girl, you know? I have a disease in my head. I have a disease in my heart. I have the family disease of alcoholism. I have a spiritual malady. And even if all the alcoholics in my life went and jumped in a lake, I wouldn't know anybody, but but I would still be messed up. I would still not understand how to have relationships with other people and how to be a member of society and how to get along with other human beings. I don't know how to have relationships. Just simple, everyday. Like, I don't know how to have bank transaction relationships, you know? I don't know how to talk to people on the telephone. I seriously had to learn to talk to people on the telephone, like to call, like a pizza place or anything. I had to learn how to do that because I didn't know how to talk to other people that I didn't know on the phone. That's how much I had this disease of not being able to have relationships with other people. I had no connections. All of my connections had been numbed or broken or weren't there, or I don't know where they were, but I didn't have them, you know? And I was so isolated, and I lived so much in this world that completely revolved around my head and my feelings, and my feelings were all filtered and weird, and they came in sideways, and they weren't true, and they told me things that couldn't make any sense in the real world, and that was all that I knew at all. I didn't know how to have relationships, or communicate, or just have intimacy with another person on a friendship level, if nothing else. And so I started working the steps, and this time I had dealt with all the other stuff in my life that was holding me back from working an Alatine program and an Al-Anon program. And I heard a really amazing thing from a dual member the other day who told me that AA taught them to live sober, but Al-Anon taught them to live. And what happened to me was that even after I got sober and I stopped starving and I dealt with some of the other stuff that was going on in my life, I still didn't know how to live, you know? Now I was feeling again, which sucked. You know, I have all these feelings. I still don't know what to do with them. This is a problem I had to begin with. I didn't know what to do with them before. I still don't know what to do with them. I'm just having them again. You know, I didn't want them to begin with. So I started getting really involved in service work again in Alatine, and I started talking to Alatines again and going to more Alatine meetings and going to Al-Anon meetings and talking to Al-Anons and talking to people about the Al-Anon program. And working the steps in Al-Anon and learning to live and to exist in the rest of the world as a human being. And it's been pretty amazing. I have a higher power now who I love. I have a relationship with both of my parents. Now, I'm 18 years old. Normal 18-year-olds do not have relationships with their parents. Not good relationships with their parents. I love my parents. My mom, like the coolest lady I know. She's nuts, but she's really cool. And my dad is hip. All of my friends are like, oh, I want to hang out with your dad, you know? Like, my girlfriend loves my dad. They're like, they hang out, you know? It's great. And I love hanging out with my parents. I'm like, senior trip? I'm going to go camping with my dad, you know? Oh, Mom, will you go to a roundup with me? I love my parents so much. And that is a miracle. like, that is a miracle, because I'm able to be honest with them. I'm able to tell them things that I need them to know about who I am. And I'm able to let them love me. Somebody said something to me just a couple of hours ago about how if I don't let in other people's love, I'm stopping them from loving me. And that made so much sense to me, you know, because if I couldn't let in, my parents, they love me, you know, they would love me anyway. But now they get to love me as a person, as who I am, as the person that I've grown into. And I'm really proud of that person, and I really like that person. And now they get to love me for real, you know, a different kind of love than any other kind, because it's about they love that I, you know, whatever, my little things that I do. They love the things that I choose to do with my life, the decisions that I make, the way that I think. They love that. They love who Corey really is, rather than loving me because I'm their daughter. And that's how I'm able to have relationships with the people in my life today. And it's because I love myself and I like myself. And that's something that I never thought that I would say honestly. You know, I might BS it. I might say, yeah, I love myself, la-di-da-di-da-di. We're supposed to love everybody in Alateen. It says so in the closing, blah, blah, blah. But I really didn't like myself. When I started to do some really serious inventories, just this time around in the steps, I learned some things about myself and my behaviors that I really didn't like. You know, I always thought that I was a pretty nice, selfless person. It turns out that I'm a pretty malicious, selfish person. And that there's a part of me that really likes to hurt people that I love to prove that they love me. And that really scares me. I really don't like that about myself. I really don't like that in the past I have purposefully hurt people who I love so that I could tell that they loved me, because if I could hurt them, then I knew that they loved me. And I did a lot of tearing through people's lives, trying to feel validated in them loving me, you know, trying to make sure, because I needed them to love me, but I could never really believe that they did. So I did a lot of tearing through their lives to validate that they loved me, which in my head really made sense at the time, although it doesn't really anymore. But I found all this stuff out about myself, and I really didn't like that part of me. And two things happened. One was I realized that I had always been more malicious to myself than I had been to anybody else, that I tore myself apart all the time, that I was vindictive and judgmental and malicious to myself constantly. I don't think I really wanted to like myself, because I knew I was going to let myself down. And I really needed, people always tell me that I have to learn to love myself before I can love other people. But my mom's sponsor always says that that we have to learn to forgive other people before we can forgive ourselves. And that made sense to me. You know, it's just same as that I can't think my way into right acting. I have to act my way into right thinking. When I started acting kind and loving towards other people, I was willing. I gained self-esteem when I started doing esteemable acts, you know. So I was able to love the person I was when I was able to be kind to other people and compassionate towards other people. And I learned to forgive myself and to like who I was through being compassionate and doing esteemable acts and through being of service in this program. And there's something else that happened to me when I started doing that. I forget what it was. I had a point. I don't know. I really found a compassion inside myself that I didn't know was there, and I really was able to start liking myself. And when I started liking myself, I was able to let other people in, and I was able to let God in more fully. It's just all kind of cyclical, little step by little step, you know. And the next cycle around, I get it a little bit more. And then the next cycle around, I get that a little bit more. It's like that onion, you know. I sure don't have it yet, but I've got a little bit more than I did a year ago, you know. And that's pretty incredible. So what happened with all of this was that I was doing a lot of service work in Alateen again, making amends, behavioral amends for having basically flaked out on them year after year for a couple years, 3 years there. And I was doing so much that they decided to elect me AZAC chair, which is a big deal for me, because AZAC is probably the most important thing in my life. And it saved my life just over and over and over again. And the people that are on AZAC committee are my best friends. And the people who go to AZAC change my life just every year. And the fact that the conference trusted me enough to put me in charge of that for a year says so much to me about the miracle of this program. Because 2 years ago, they never would have trusted me enough to put that program in my hands, you know, to put that any part of AZAC in my hands, you know, to put AZAC is really important to a lot of people, and they trusted me enough. They saw my recovery enough to trust me that I wouldn't screw it up too bad, and I love being AZAC chair. It's really incredible. I'm going to graduate from high school, which was kind of questionable there for a while. And I'm in a relationship now with this incredible girl who, she's an Alateen. I met her in Alateen, so she's a little bit crazy. She's a lot crazy. But she loves me, and I love her. She's not a drunk. This is a good start. And she teaches me something about myself every day, you know? She teaches me how to be a different person and how to be somebody that I like more every day. And I never thought that I could be in a relationship that taught me that much, you know? I always thought that my relationships would always just be me trying to fill up that hole inside of me and trying to get enough from that other person, because that's how all my relationships with everyone were. I just drained people until the point that they kind of fled, you know? I have like this series of like year-long friendships where I'd be like best friends with this person for like a year, and then they would just be drained and they would leave. And there's a lot of them. And this person, we learn from each other. And we have fun. And she's teaching me how to play again and be a kid. And, you know, we have, like, craft days and we, like, color and stuff. And it's really exciting. And she, like, crochets me little purses and stuff. You know, it's fun. We have fun. We get to act like we're kids. We don't have to act like we're, you know, 40 all the time. I'm 18, you know? I don't want to act 40. And I did. Nothing wrong with being 40. I just don't want to be because I'm 18, you know? And, you know, I just don't want to be right now. And but I spent a lot of time thinking that I had to be, you know. I spent a lot of time thinking that I had to be really old for my age and, you know, I had to be the responsible one and blah, blah, blah. And I don't have to be, I mean, I have to be vaguely responsible because I'm AZAC chair and, you know, but I don't have to be as responsible as I always thought I had to be. So all of these, like, amazing gifts are in my life right now, you know. Like, I have this spirituality and I do maintenance work. I get down on my knees twice a day as soon as I wake up. Right before I go to bed, I'm gonna pray, and I, you know, I ask God for help in the morning to get through the day, and I thank God at the end of the day for getting me through the day. And I do a 10 step every night. I do a gratitude journal every night. I go to a lot of meetings. I do a lot of service work. I do maintenance work. I do stuff. I believe that the 10th step is one of the most important, they're all really important, but the 10th step is, you know, is that one that just keeps me from going off the edge again, because before I know it, my brain has run away with me, I am crazier than I thought I could be again, I have regressed 200 steps in my recovery, and I'm starting to do things that I haven't done for 5 years. You know, like, that's what happens when I just kind of let go for a little while and think that I'm all recovered and well and stuff, and I'm healthy now. It's not true. I'm in this place right now where I need to transition. You know, I need to go from Alateen to Al-Anon, and that's really hard for me because I've been in Alateen for, like, 11 years now, you know, and it's my whole life. I've grown up in Alateen. They have grown me up, you know. They kind of took me by the hair and pulled me up a lot of the time. And I don't really want to transition in a lot of ways. There are a lot of things that I think are unique to Alateen that I really love. They're real rambunctious, as you may have noticed at the beginning of the meeting, and I love that. There's a lot of really rigorous, maybe brutal honesty. There's just like, this is where I'm at. This is where my life's at. There's a lot of sobbing hysterically. There's just a lot of real. And I know that they have that in Al-Anon meetings. And I know that there's also a lot of people in Al-Anon have had more time to build up their walls, and they're harder to tear down. And it's just a very, it's different. Al-Anon's different. But at the same time, sometimes I go to Alateen meetings and I don't really understand. I don't really connect to what's going on. People are talking about, you know, junior high, and they're talking about what's going on with their drunk parents and having to live there all the time and not being able to get out of the house. And I've been there, you know, with the not being able to get out of the house and with the, when, you know, just I've been there, but I'm not there anymore. And I go to Al-Anon meetings and I really connect. And I hear people who have a lot more time than I do, and there aren't a lot of people in Alateen who have a lot more time than I do, you know, or any more time than I do. I'm kind of at that phase where I really need to be, to just take the next step in my recovery in Al-Anon, and that means transitioning. And that's pretty incredible that I can do that. I love Al-Anon just for existing right now, because if I had to kind of just step off this rock face into, you know, oblivion, I'd, even if I have another program that I'm a member of, I still would be lost without the Al-Anon program. I would be insane in like a week without Al-Anon. So the fact that it's there and that I do get to transition is an incredible, incredible calming note for me. And it just, Alateen is the best thing that has ever, ever, ever happened to me. You know, I'm sober today, and I have about a year and 9 months sober, and that's a damn nice thing to have happened. That doesn't suck either, you know, that's pretty good too, but I never would have gotten sober without Alateen, or not this early yet anyway, and I wouldn't be alive anyway. I wouldn't have made it to 16 if it weren't for Alateen. And my parents might not still be alive either. Everything that I have in this entire world, from my bed, which my sponsor gave me, to my life, everything is because of this program. Everything that has ever happened good to me has been a direct result of the 12 steps. Everything that has ever mattered to me, I have been able to have as a direct result of the 12 steps. My entire life has been this huge blessing from God, because for some reason I got lucky enough to have the 12 steps early, and I stayed more because God wanted me to than because I wanted to, and because I needed to. And I can't think of any other miracle, any greater miracle today than me standing in front of a group of people and being able to honestly tell them that I am happy. You know? Because I really didn't know what happy was. I really didn't know what happy was, and I really didn't understand what it was to be happy. And I do today. And I understand what it means to love people. Really, really love people. Like, love people so hardcore that that it makes me cry, you know? And not in that bad way. Not in that I don't know where they are. I don't know if they're drunk. I don't know if they're dead way. Not in that way of, like, I don't know if they're ever going to love me back. But that way that that it lights up my whole soul. And it lights up my whole life. And I can see them glowing back. And there's just this, like, incredible spark of understanding between us when we hug, you know? I can love people like that today, and they can love me back, and I can let them, and I can be really, truly happy, and I can love my life. There are days when I don't want to get out of bed. I hate trigonometry. I hate it, okay? I really do. And there are days when I really don't want to get out of bed and face trig. But But there are most days I really want to get out of bed just so I can call someone and tell them that I love them. Just so that I can hang out with my cat, you know. I don't know, just so that I get to get out of bed. like the fact that I'm not dead is really a blessing. I want to get up so that I can talk to God and say, oh my God, I woke up another morning, you know. I got out of bed another morning. The whole thing is this huge miracle, and it's hard work. And there are days when I really wish it wasn't hard work, you know. I don't want to do the maintenance. I don't want to do the 10 steps. I don't want to do, I don't want to go to a meeting that day. I really don't want to call my sponsor because she always makes you do an inventory no matter what I call her about. Even if I call her to say, hi, Joni, how was your day? She is like, write an inventory. I don't want to write another inventory. I think that's... She does. You know, all right. There's days when I wish I wasn't so afflicted with this disease, you know. I wish that I wasn't so crazy and that the people who I love hadn't been forced to suffer so much from my disease and theirs. I wish that the world didn't destroy, that alcoholism didn't destroy families, and that I didn't have to watch little kids come into Alateen meetings and not be able to speak because they've been screamed at their whole lives to be silent, you know. I wish that I didn't have to see that. But I also know that if I stick around long enough, someday I get to be an Alateen sponsor. And and maybe, you know, I get to keep allowing conferences to happen, and I keep allowing there to be places where people can go. My first AZAC, I had never let anyone hold me while I cried. In fact, I'd never let anyone see me cry before. Not really cry, you know. Not like just break down and sob. And I stood there in front of the whole conference and I just sobbed. And, cause I trusted again. I trusted for the first time in a really long time. And I get up at conferences and I read my poetry. And that's a huge trust issue for me. And I tell people things that are very, you know, they're a part of my soul that I never thought I would share with anyone, and I share them with Alateens because maybe it'll help somebody else, you know? And I don't know, you know, just so many people have been so kind to me, and I just want to be able to do that for somebody else, you know? Like Jason Matt, I'm sure many of you know Jason Matt. He was involved in Northern California Alateen for a long time. You know, he bought me lunch one time, and he said, you know, there's been a lot of lunches bought for me. You just buy some other kid lunch someday. You just, you know, that's all I want you to do. I want you to pass that on. When you've got a job and you're an Alateen sponsor, you buy some kid lunch, you know? And you know, I can hold some kid who's this their first AZAC and they've never cried in front of people before. I can hold them and tell them that it's okay. Or I can, just be really warm and welcoming. The first time I came out to NOCAC, like, Tommy was chair my first year, and just a bunch of these, some of these kids were there, some of them weren't. They all just came out to me, they were so warm and welcoming, and like, hi, who are you? You know, let me hold you, let me hug you, just anywhere I go, you know, everywhere that I go, they're there, and they're opening their arms. And I can be that, you know? I can open my arms to other people, and let other people in, and share the message. And I really want to do that. I really want to share the message. And I really want to spread the love. And I'm really excited that Al-Anon's turning 50. And I hope that when it turns 100, I'll have 66 years. and I'll be around to welcome it. So thank you all very much. Thank you all for helping keep me sane today, and for loving me today, and for being a part of this program.